This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio right here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. Well, according to Jacqueline Middleton, life gives you no guarantees. Well, I can guarantee one thing, that if you read one of Jacqueline's books, you will have a fun time and you will really enjoy it. And that is a guarantee. And I'm so happy to welcome to the program today the author of London, Can You Wait? Jacqueline Middleton. Hi, Jackie. I don't know. Should I call you Jackie?
You can call me Jackie Patsy.
What do you like totally to be fine. Called?
I like to be called Jackie. Jacqueline is quite long. When I was a little kid, I always had a hard time pronouncing it. So Jackie is the name I go by now.
Okay. And I had one author on, and she pronounced her name Jacqueline. And although she's American, she wanted it Jacqueline. So I said, okay, I had to remember that. So... Oh, Jackie's easier, but I saw that some of your fans call you Jax. I don't know if you like that.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly fine. That's actually my Twitter handle, and I also use that on Instagram.
So that's why.
That's perfectly fine.
Because
yeah, that's where they're getting it from.
Your fans, and you have so many of them, just love you.
They love the books, that's for sure. Well, they love taking photos of them. They're all over Instagram.
I know. Well, of course, the new book is London, Can You Wait? And that was a follow-up to London Belongs to Me. So
that's right.
I'm holding up the cover of the book, London, Can You Wait? Because it has there on the front cover a photo of the London Eye, and I have stood in that exact spot many times. So I love it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful spot. That's the one great thing about London. There are so many gorgeous places that you can use if you're writing a story about the city. So you're kind of spoiled for choice for your covers.
Well, your story, we'll have to tell people about it because it's a fascinating story about a young woman named Alex Sinclair, who goes to London from Florida, by the way. So it's very, very apropos here as I'm sitting here in Florida. And today, actually, although it's usually glorious, it is a foggy day, so it's a bit Londonish here.
That's fitting. That's very fitting. Yeah, Alex, the main character, is from Tallahassee, but she's always dreamed of London, so she heads off there.
Exactly. And now, you know, the funny thing is, for me, I also did this same path that sort of Alex did. As a young girl, I always was dreaming about living in England. And as soon as I was 21, I bought a little cottage in just outside of London because it was near the home of Jane Austen. So I know that feeling of moving to London and the excitement of being in that city.
That's amazing. How long did you stay there for?
I owned the cottage for a long time, and I lived there like for 4 or 5 years. So it was an exciting time, and I got to know London very well. And so that's why I so enjoyed both books, because, wow, you know, you really make me nostalgic because I'm back there in London. You write so beautifully about it.
Thank you so much. That's really kind of you to say that. I love London. London's my favorite place to visit. I've been far too many times. I was trying to count the other day, and I think I've been there over 30 times. I was actually there 4 times this year. I just got back 2 days ago. I have a cold, so I apologize. I brought a cold back on the plane. But yeah, London is a really important place to me. I love it. I love writing about it. And I wanted to make sure that readers, when they would pick up my books, that especially if they hadn't been there, they would get a good taste of what it was like to be in London, the different landmarks, the weather, the type of people they might meet. So to hear from someone like you who has lived there and knows London and the area inside out, that's a huge compliment. So thank you.
Oh, well, so many things. I love so many things about your books. I love, of course, all of the references to things in England. And of course, I was also involved in writing. And I was really thrilled with your the entire playwright background that you've put in the book, because I think that's so fascinating. And London is, of course, I spend all of my time going to the theater in London. I saw every show that I could see because I love the theater.
You sound like me. Whenever I go, I literally every night have a playbook. If I go by myself, I just got back and I was with my husband, and he likes plays too, but he doesn't like them quite as much as I do. So if I go by myself, I'll actually go at night, but I'll go during the day too. I'll go to matinee. So I can chalk up in a week's day 10 plays quite easily. I love going. There's so much happening there, and there's so much variety. So you can have musical theater and plays and off West End plays. There's so much happening there. It's a very vibrant city for going to see theater. So it's kind of wrong if you go there and you don't see anything.
Oh, absolutely. The theater is just such a draw for people, because once you start going to the theater, real theater there, so many of them are so, they're little theaters and they're not big and fancy, or some are like small and fancy, but wherever you get in there, the actors are always top quality. The stage, settings are always great. I just love the theater in London.
And it's always evolving, which is great too. It's not stagnant. They're not kind of on one trend and that's all that they follow. And it's exactly like you say, there's large theaters like the National Theater, which is actually three theaters in the one building on the South Bank. And it features very heavily in my story, National Theater. And then there's other places like the Royal Court. Again, that's also in my story, which is a bit smaller, but it's very old and storied. And, the actors that have performed on that stage are a who's who of world theater, actually. But you can also go to plays in pubs. Or, in gardens. They're all over the place in different venues. They're small, they're big, they're outdoors. You can catch basically anything you want to see.
And one of the best things is they're affordable. To go to the theater here in America, because there aren't enough of them, and there aren't enough actors, and there aren't enough theater, every time, even in a small town, the cost is so prohibitive. But in London, you really felt you could afford to go theater every night.
It's true. But there's a good range of prices, and a lot of the theaters have special schemes that have low-priced tickets, so students can go. They very much want to cultivate an environment where it's not for the elite, that it's not, stuffy people from Chelsea or Kensington who can go to the theater. They want to make sure that young people go. They want to make sure that tourists can go. It's very affordable. Of course, there are prices that are up there. If you want a seat within the first five rows of one of the most popular plays, you're going to pay for it. But there's a host of pricing. So, you can still go. You don't need to, spend your entire vacation savings on one play.
Exactly. And Alex takes London to heart. She really loves it. She really, London becomes a part of her. And I love all of your references to the different, cultural things in London. I love your references to Doctor Who, because most Americans, there are a lot of Americans who are now getting, accustomed to Doctor Who and understanding him and the program. But I really enjoy that part.
Well, that's great, because I know that kind of thing is important to me. I very much love British culture and entertainment, and my favorite TV shows all come from over there. And Doctor Who is one of my favorites. I love Doctor Who. It's amazing. The latest Doctor Who lead is going to be a female, which is terrific. And I wanted to give Alex that kind of passion for all things geeky, because she is a very geeky girl. She likes things that perhaps the other kids at school might not be into. She has like-minded friends. One of her closest friends, who you learn a lot about in my books, is named Lucy, and she's a British gal, and she has similar geeky tastes. And it's just fun to sort of play off those relationships. And that relationship, too, was one that began online through their geeky passion for Doctor Who. And personally, that kind of echoes my own life. Some of my best friends are people I've met through hobbies and pursuits like this. And they're all people I've met online first and then met in person. And now they're like my best friends.
Well, that is the trend. Everybody meets online nowadays. Now, you know,
it's true.
It is. And the wonderful thing about your books, well, both of them, you have really, I think, created with Alex a character that so many, young women will relate to. I think, you know, the Tourist Bureau in London is going to have to give you some kind of an award, because I believe a lot of girls are going to read your books and say, We're going to London. So I can see lots of groups of girls going to London just because of your books. And of course, there's the romance side of it, which makes it really fun fan fiction and sort of this, what they call chick lit. But I think it's just enjoyable, and your writing is excellent.
Thank you so much. Yeah, people have been saying that it's made them want to go to London, which, I've done my job then, because I was really trying to convey how much I love the place and how wonderful it is. And I know it's got its down points. Every place does. But, you know, there's so much negativity around. It's kind of nice to celebrate somebody's love for something. And it's accessible. There's lots to do there. And, you know, if somebody decides after reading one of my novels to go on their own adventure there, I've done my job. I'll be very happy. It's a great place to go to. So,
well,
yeah,
you have to write a companion book, Alex's Tour of London, so you can put in all of these wonderful places, because there are so many wonderful places in London to visit. And sometimes I, you know, when I talk to friends, and I realize they haven't done most of them, and they missed out. And I feel so sad for them. I say, oh, but you should have gone here. And I've been told by a few people, well, why don't you write the guidebook already? You know where to go. So, but there are so many wonderful places in London that are off the beaten track. So you're not, you know, just in the tourist crowds, but just in London and getting that feel of what it's like to be there.
That's true. And there's so many places that aren't the typical tourist places. I mean, you go there and, of course, you want to see the Tower of London. You want to see Big Ben. You want to see Buckingham Palace. But there are so many other places, neighborhoods, that are the real London, where you can go where the locals go. You know, you can eat in cafes where they do, or go to restaurants and bars, parks, you know, festivals, markets. There are so many outdoor markets. And where my characters in the first book and the second book, for a few of them, where they live is an area called London Fields, which is in the east end of London. It's in the area called Hackney. And it's a really interesting, diverse place. They've got a wonderful market there on the weekend called Broadway Market. And it's a really cool area. And I also wanted to sort of showcase those kind of places. South Bank as well. I mean, some parts of the South Bank are quite well known because that's where the National Theatre is. But Borough Market is there. It's the oldest market in London, and it's got the best food. You can just eat your way through the market. So that's the thing. If people are going to go there, I would say make sure you do check off, you know, Tower Bridge and the Eye and all those great things, but also go a little bit farther afield and kind of see where, like, real London lurks.
And walk around Knightsbridge a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's always fun, because you don't know who you're going to see. And you do sometimes see some really famous people walking around there.
You do. You run into people all the time. I've done it. I was just there last week at a play, and one of my favorite actors was a couple rows ahead of me. And that was exciting. There's an instance in my first book where Lucy makes reference to running into an actor who is Alex's favorite actor. That actually happened to me. I ran into that very actor in London while I was doing research for the book. And it was funny because I was joking with my husband about this particular actor and saying, wouldn't it be funny if you ran into him? And we were just sort of like, oh, that's so silly. That never happens. And it happened. We ran into him at a stoplight.
Oh,
so, it happens.
It is so vibrant. Just walking through Harrod's Food Hall.
Oh,
don't you just love it?
And that's the thing with London. It's a really big city, and there are things that you won't have seen. Even when you've gone so many times. I've been there so many times, but I had never been to Fortnum and Mason's.
Oh.
And I finally got there last April. I was over for my birthday. And my husband and I went, and I was, what took me so long? That place? Everyone has to go there.
Oh.
You have to go there.
I know. I love that place. That was one of the places I used to hunt when I was there. I was there all the time.
I can see why. Like, I now make sure I go. I've been three times since that initial visit. I go. We just were there. We brought back a bag full. And for people who don't know, Fortnum & Mason's is it's a very, very old store. And I think I forget what they call it, but the Queen shops there. They have the seal that tells you the royal family shop there. But if you go in on the main floor, it's basically food and candy and cookies and tea, and they're in beautiful packaging. You can just shop to your heart's content. It's the most amazing store. And we were just there with all the Christmas decorations.
Oh, it's the most beautiful time of the year to be there.
It's gorgeous. So anyone going to London, put Fortnum & Mason's on your list.
Exactly. And that's where everybody, in the old days when British Empire, all of the people used to send to their families in Africa and India and wherever they were, they would send them boxes of food from Fortnum & Mason. So wherever there was the sun didn't sit on the British Empire in those days, and there would be a Fortnum & Mason's box there because people would send these boxes that they're still famous for, and you can order them online, and it's really exciting to have something from Fortnum & Mason's.
It's true. They've got hampers, and they have them all piled up, and you can send them any time of the year, and, I mean, that would be an amazing gift. If someone sent me a hamper from Fortnum & Mason's, I think you're my best friend. The most amazing product. So, yeah, they're wonderful gifts. It's a great place. And again, it can be pricey, but there are things there that anyone can buy.
You can walk away with a – I have right now in my kitchen, I have a tea canister from Fortnum & Mason's. I look at it every morning and I say,
there you go.
You see there, that's all you need. And it reminds you of the wonderful place. And it's been in business for over 300 years. So I think they know what they're doing.
Oh, they really know what they're doing. And it's beautiful. And, similar to Harrod's, they do offer products that anyone can buy. They're not just for people who are extremely wealthy. So you can go there and bring home part of Fortnum & Mason's or Harrod's for yourself.
Okay, so as I told everybody at the beginning, life gives you no guarantees, according to Jackie here. But as I said, you are guaranteed a good read with both of these books. The London Belongs to Me was the first book, and then the follow-up was London, Can You Wait? And these are both wonderful books, and I hope that everyone will go out and get them. Perfect, this one, the second one ends around Christmas time, so it's also a great gift for Christmas. Do you have a website you want people to go to?
I do. I have a website. It's www.jacquelinemiddleton.com, and you can read more about my books there. I have a blog which goes behind the scenes into the theaters and pubs and places involved in my books that you'll read in the pages, so you can get lots of info. There's giveaways and all sorts there.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. And the book is the new book, London Can You Wait? It's available at Barnes & Noble and wherever books are sold. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful read. It takes you to London. You'll want to get on a plane and go. And then, next time when you are going beyond London for your next book, head west a little bit over to Sonning, which is near Henley. And That's where my cottage was. And it was wonderful to have a cottage there. And the years that I lived there, right in an English village, were absolutely fantastic.
Oh, it sounds beautiful.
So are you already working on your third book?
I am. I'm working on my third one right now. It's in front of me right here on my laptop.
And is it set in London or is someplace else?
It is not. It's not in London. It's actually in the States.
In the States. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I
New
think
York.
In New York. Well, that's another great place. But as I said, the theater in New York is too expensive. I can never afford anything there. And that's why I love London so much, because it's affordable. And, you know, I think how did you find an agent? All the writers who listen to this program always are asking, how did they find an agent?
I actually don't have one.
Well, see, now, isn't that wonderful? I can tell you don't need an agent. And look at, she's got this major, major book. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I don't have one. I've gone it on my own, and you can, and people can. They should explore that, definitely.
Well, I think that I'm shocked, because agents should be knocking on your door like crazy, because you are a very, very talented author. And I had no idea that you didn't have an agent. My goodness, see, I asked this question, and I should know that. Wow, amazing. You have done an amazing job.
Thank you.
And just for that alone, people have to get this book and see why you are so good that you can. Oh, wow, this is amazing. I am very proud to have spoken to you today. It's just wonderful. So again, Jacqueline Middleton, find the book, and it's called London. I just love that. London, Can You Wait? And thank you so much for being on the program today, Jackie.
Thanks, Patsy.
Okay. Have a wonderful Christmas. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Wow, that's nice. No agent. I have to see this, because I can't believe this is an unagented author. She is amazing. Talent. Whoa, whoa, whoa. And they picked her up. Well, this can happen. There are some publishers who, like Kensington Press, you don't need an agent. They will read your book. My goodness, without an agent. And so many people find it daunting to try to find an agent. In this case, she's done two major books, best-selling books, really wonderful books, and she's done it without an agent. So you can do it too if you just try to start writing. And we're going to go to a commercial break, and then we'll be back in a little while, okay?
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. PATZI.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hello. to the sun. Here they come, zooming to meet hot thunder. Adam, boys, give it the gun. Down we dive, spouting a flame from under. Off with one terrible roar. We live in fame or go down in flame.
Boy, nothing can stop the Army Air Corps.
Okay. Well, I wanted to play that music today because today, as you all know, is December 7th. And in 1941, it was the start of World War II for America. And my guest today is someone really very special. He is the last fighter pilot. And the book that tells his story is called The Last Fighter Pilot, The True Story of the Final Combat Mission of World War II. And I am so honored to welcome to Joy on Paper, Captain Jerry Yellen. Hi, Captain Yellen.
Nice to hear.
Okay, well, I'm so happy to welcome you to the program. As I was telling people, you know, this book, which was written by Don Brown, who himself is a fantastic military writer. He's a former JAG officer, and he got together with you to write this book about your last flight, as you were the last. It was absolutely amazing that it was, 5 days after the bomb was dropped in Nagasaki was your last flight, correct?
Yes.
Now, the story is about you and about your wingman, First Lieutenant Philip Schlamberg. So tell us about that flight. What were you flying that day?
Well, we flew P-51. That's all we have. And we were briefed, told that we're going on a last mission. And Phil leaned over and said, if we go on this flight, I'm not coming back. And I went to the CO, who told me that if Phil himself agreed to see Dr. Lewis, the flight surgeon, he might get off. But Phil refused to do that. So on the next morning, I just told him, stay close on my wing. And he did that. And when we were through scraping, I led my flight into some clouds. And when I came out, he was gone. When we landed back on Iwo Jima, we found out that when we started the strafe, the war had already been over for 3 hours. So that was the last mission of World War II.
And, of course, this flight was ordered because at that point, as you said, it was already over at that point, but the Japanese did not immediately surrender after the second atomic bomb was dropped on Japan. And so we were continuing to fight.
Well, I think Emperor Hirohito wanted to surrender, but the army officers kept him from doing that. So he knew the inevitable. He made a record, and the record was broadcast, and we never heard the results of that.
Now, when, how old were you at that time?
I was 21.
You were 21. Now, Don Braun has done an absolutely marvelous job of explaining and bringing to life that entire event. It was, of course, in the heart of the Pacific Theater, and these were the final days of the war, and it's very compelling. The writing is very compelling. And I wanted to just tell people that when they read this book, they will be right feeling that they are right there with you as you you were stationed in Iwo Jima. This is after the big battle, of course, and we had our airfield there, and we were sending planes out for missions from there. And but you had been on Iwo Jima for how long at that point?
I landed there on March 7th. The Marines landed on February 19th. And we got there when they had enough room to protect our airplane.
So you saw...
As far as the book is concerned, my children, my family, and my friends said that they never knew and understood exactly what we went through until John Brown's book came out. It's really a masterpiece.
It really is. You know, he's intermingled the harrowing, you know, the accounts of the war and with explanations of military protocol. He talks about flight patterns, and he even talks about the food that you ate. He makes such a compelling story that it is a book that anyone will find fascinating because it does cover so many areas. Of course, I particularly am interested in the flying. My husband's a pilot, and as a matter of fact, he learned how to fly on a P-51. So he was like a trainer plane by the time that he got into flying. So I found that fascinating.
Well, Patsy, Don Brown's a historian, and he pulls a lot of history into the book. It's great.
It really is. And of course, he also tells about your early life too, about where you came from and your childhood.
Well, I graduated from high school in Hillside, New Jersey in June of 1941 and had a scholarship to college, but no money for books or housing or shelter. So I postponed entering to the spring semester of 1942. And I was always interested in aviation. I made model airplanes. I read books and stories. And on December 7th, I made up my mind I was going to fly fighter planes against the Japanese. And I did that.
And, of course, your story takes a strange twist in life because there you were in 1941 setting off to help destroy Japan. But later on, after the war, something very interesting happened to your life. What was that?
Well, in 1983, I was asked to go to Japan, and I refused to go. When I told my wife that, she said, "You never asked me if I wanted to go to Japan." So in October 1983, we went to Japan. And when we came home, we gave our younger son, Robert, who was a senior in college, a trip to Japan. And when he graduated in 1984, he went there for 1 year to teach English. And now it's 2017, and he hasn't come back yet. He met and married the daughter of a Japanese kamikaze pilot who was sent to China and didn't kill himself. And I have three Japanese grandchildren, and I love them dearly. They're no different than my three American grandchildren.
It's such a strange turn of events, how life can send you into a loop, right? That at one point in your life, you're off to kill Japanese people, and later on, you have Japanese grandchildren. I think it's a beautiful story.
I wrote a book about it called A War and Wedding.
Exactly. And it is a very touching story because, you know, to for all of our military men, and I think many of our military men now in the who fought in Vietnam, they have also gone back and seen the changes in the country and wanting to be friends with the people that they one time fought.
Well, I think we're not the people we're not Democrats and Republicans. We're not the color of our skin. We're not the language we talk. We're all human beings, all of us.
And that it's an important lesson and one that I think you have epitomized with your life and with the story of your life. And so I, you know, when we were talking here about your first lieutenant, your wingman, First Lieutenant Peter Schlamberg, it must have been very difficult for you and for all of the young pilots because all of the pilots were very young. We had so many pilots and so many were lost. It must have been a terrible thing at that time.
Well, I flew with 16 guys within. The youngest was 19. The oldest was 26. When you put a uniform on, whether it's a fireman or a policeman, a military, you pledge your life for the lives of your buddies and for the lives of people that you serve. And that's not a very well-known detail. But that's what soldiers do. And that's I was just one of 16 million who served.
And how many missions did you actually fly, combat missions?
19.
And that's a lot of missions at that time because a lot of pilots didn't make it to that number.
That's true. There were 8 hours at a time. A lot of flying.
And now where did you learn to fly? What state?
I graduated from Luke Field in August of 1943. In Phoenix, Arizona.
And you were sent straight to combat?
Well, I went straight to Hawaii to join the 78th Fighter Squadron. You get 50 hours in a P-40. But of the 28 of us in my class who went there, they kept 4 as permanent cadre. So I never left the 78th Fighter Squadron.
And of course, one of the terrible things, and I'm sure all of the pilots were worried not just about being killed, but also about being captured, because it was a very difficult time in those days.
Well, we were at war. There were evil countries. We fought the evil, and now those three countries, Germany, Japan, and Italy, are our allies and friends.
So it makes you sometimes, you have to, that's why I think a book like this, and of course, I think all of Don Brown's books are really great. He is, as you said, he is such an excellent historian. He does amazing research for all of his books. And this book, The Last Fighter Pilot, became a national bestseller on the week it was released. And it was named to Publishers Weekly bestsellers list for nonfiction hardback, and I know that the reviews were also excellent, and everyone talked about how important it was to have this book out there. Now, where did you tell everyone where it was released and where you and Don released the book?
Was released in August at the Reagan Library and the Nixon Library. It's only been out since August 1st.
And exactly. So it was released there at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation Library because it is a book that, as we said, you know, if people don't know about the true story of what happened and how horrific it was, they can't understand the future, because we need to be able to look at the past and say, these things can happen, but as you said, our three big enemies are now our three big friends. And it's a matter of how you look at things and how perhaps you can avoid war and become friends. So skip that war part for a while, huh?
Well, people who are willing to kill other people for what they believe are evil. That started with the Crusades, probably before that. And we have evil people today in the world. Anybody who wants to sell what they believe to other people or kill them if they don't buy what they're selling is evil.
Exactly. And we have to confront it. We have to be matter of fact about it. We have to say this is evil and sort of identify it and be able to name it. And in the case of World War II, we fought and we won. And now those countries changed. Those countries had to take a look at themselves too and say, oh, life is much better if we're all friends. So we hope that other countries will learn from this, but sometimes they just don't learn, right?
Well, you're talking politics now, and I don't want to go...
No, we don't want to go into politics at all, but we do want to tell people that they should read history, and Don Brown's books are all excellent, and they are really sort of must-read books if you're a historian and or interested in history, and I think that this book... You've done a beautiful job with him. I know that it was a work of love to be able to share your story. And I'm sure for your family, it's been very important that your memories and your story be told. And that, of course, you be honored for what your service and the service of all of the young men who risked their lives at that time.
Ashley, I really appreciate being on your show, but I had a fall last night, and I'm in bed.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm running out of steam.
You're running out of... Okay, well, I want to thank you for... Well, it's typical of someone like you that you would weather through it, but I do want to thank you for being on Joy on Paper today, and just take care of yourself, and we're honored to have you on the program.
My pleasure.
Okay. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Wow.
Okay. He's an amazing man, and he is 93 years old, so he's had a fall. And look at that. He went through it. I had a little problem, and I was a while back, and I was ready to collapse, but here at 93, this American hero weathered through, 20 minutes. So I'm very honored that he did so. But it's typical of that generation. They were really the most wonderful generation. And we're going to have let's do a book buzz from Rita Moreau. She did a wonderful review of a book that I really like. So we'll do that right now. Okay.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with Book Buzz. The Dollhouse Romance by Emily Assad is a very unique, entertaining tale encompassing many of the elements of Harry Potter, magic, mystery, and interesting characters from the perspective of an intelligent teenage girl facing unusual challenges and unusual circumstances. Here's the buzz. When her mom is deployed overseas, 17-year-old Xenia is forced to move alone into a mysterious old mansion where her mom was recently employed as a baker. She quickly discovers that the place holds many secrets. At the mansion, she uncovers an enchanted dollhouse that takes human prisoners and turns them to wooden dolls if they try to escape. Its handsome teen residents begin a competition for her heart. Are they sincere or just bored? Does it really matter? Anything's better than being alone. In order to free her friends, she must confront a young sorceress who doesn't understand why it's so wrong to shrink people. Razor-sharp logic seems like a puny weapon against magic, but solving an ancient riddle could be the key to breaking the curse. If Xenia fails, she'll forfeit her size, freedom, and the future she desperately wants with her new boyfriend. Ultimately, she must decide whether to keep her friends happy or keep them forever. The Dollhouse Romance by Emily Assad is a fantastic young adult contemporary fantasy about growing up in more ways than one. It's full of the conviction that most people are fundamentally decent, even badly behaved sorceresses. Hey, this is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radiojoyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. This is Rita Moreau buzzing off for now.
Okay. Now, I just wanted to tell everyone that I'm very happy that I'm very happy about many things today because, one, I wanted to tell everyone that I am working on a new webpage, which I think will be more dynamic and even more fun for everyone. One of the things I want to ask you all to do out there is go and like me on Facebook because I am really getting very active there. And I want to make sure that I reach all of you with different programs that I want to offer. One of them is that if you have an author that you really like, just send me a message on Facebook is the best because I will check that every day. And I will invite the author on. And you can come into the studio here and or you can join me on the phone and talk to the your favorite author. And that is always a lot of fun. So I hope that you will go to Facebook, like me, and I will like you. And that's just another thing that I want to encourage you to do. One of the things I would like to ask, it's now getting toward Christmas, and it's time to order gifts. And one of the ways that you can support Joy on Paper is by ordering a MyPillow. MyPillow is just a wonderful company. I don't need to tell you how wonderful the pillows are. I just need to tell you that use my promo code, PATZI, because all of the other guys who advertise MyPillow, they have enough money. They don't need any more right now. I need, we need money here for to keep Joy on Paper on the air. And so if you use my promo code, PATZI, I would really, really appreciate it because I want to do more things for all of you, including helping authors find agents, although I was very, very happy to hear that Jacqueline Middleton managed to do it all on her own. But it really helps if you can find an agent. So I want to also help authors find methods and ways in which to promote their books. So this is one of the things that I'm doing with my new website. I'm going to be having all sorts of links to resources for authors. So if you go to MyPillow.com and order a pillow, they have this special right now, BOGO, buy one, get one. And this is a fantastic thing. You don't get this in a store. I've seen my pillows in some of the stores on sale. You only get one. But if you use my promo code PATZI, you get two. And that's fantastic. And so make sure that you order it. It's a wonderful gift for Christmas, for if you have college students, if you have, you know, any of your relatives who need a nice, comfortable night's sleep, they will appreciate it if they have a MyPillow. So that's one of the things I wanted to do, tell you to do. And then I just want to say one thing. It was really exciting. I've been looking at the book deals that are on Publishers Weekly. As I have told all of you authors out there, if you are looking for an agent, you really, all of the books that you buy that have lists of agents are, they're interesting, but they probably will not give you the bang for your buck because many times when you buy these books, the agents are already gone. They've already gone on to some other field And so half of the agents, or at least one third of the agents, are probably not even active anymore. What you need is an active agent. And the best way to find agents who are getting book deals all the time is to read Publishers Weekly. They have on their menu, they have news and they have book deals of the week. So every week they write about the book deals of what is selling. And that also tells you what is in the marketplace. So if you see books that are particular themed, those might be the books that people are interested in. So it's well worth your time to go every week to Publishers Weekly, look at their weekly book deals. Right now, for example, after 8 years of writing the series Dog under the pseudonym Spencer Quinn for Simon & Schuster, Peter Abrams is going to continue the line with a new publisher. He's decided to come out of hiding and use his real name, and he's just got at himself a major, major book deal. And it follows the life of a dog. It's just fun, named Chet, and it's a fun series. But now he's decided to move on, and he's gotten a great book deal. And Putnam has a bot. Here's a wonderful thing. You can sell your first book sometimes, if you're very lucky, for a fortune. And there's some stories there about new book deals. I think some of these authors, they got their first book deal. I don't know if they'll ever have to write again. They got seven-figure deals. Oh, my goodness. It's so exciting. So it is a wonderful thing to go to Publishers Weekly. So I suggest you do that. And meanwhile, as all of the people I've spoken to this week and all of the authors I've talked to all the time say, the most important thing is that you have to have passion and you have to really, really, really work hard. And it's possible, my goodness, if two people this week got book deals for seven figures, it's possible you could get a book deal. So get busy this weekend and start writing and just enjoy yourself. And meanwhile, I just want to say something nice to somebody today because they need it and you need it too. So, and I want to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. All the best to all of you, and have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Bye-bye now.